Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to
Fitness Big.
I'm Mark.
I am Joe.
Are you not the Emperor?
I am the Emperor of Fitness Big.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We are listening our way through all the Big Finish releases and series in order-ish.
We've been a bit slow lately, but we're going to start speeding up a little bit.
Oh, this was a bit of a tough series to get through, I think. Maybe that's why.
Oh, are you playing your cards on the table from the very beginning?
I'm doing what you do, yeah.
What?
Telling everyone your opinion straight away.
As a side note, you know, I've been accused recently of dropping far too many spoilers in my podcast of things that people are... I'm like, look, if you were going to press play... Yeah, on a discussion about an item which is described in your podcast catcher, please expect spoilers. You can't talk about something without talking about it.
Something like this, which was 20 years ago.
Exactly. I was thinking, outrageous to have a go at somebody for dropping spoilers. It's only Luke Malloy, so.
Oh, right.
And he is our...
biggest hoe.
He is
an enormous hoe, isn't he? Jesus Christ.
What spoilers was it?
Well, he says in my Buffy podcast, I'm always...
Oh, yeah.
No, it wasn't on Finish Big.
Okay.
No, I think that's okay. Buffy's 20 years old as well.
I know, but still, that's maybe a little bit different. Anyway, let's get back to Dalek Empire.
Oh, it's... No, Dalek War.
Dalek War, yes.
Yes.
So the second series of the...
why are you sighing when you say, well, so the second
series?
Well,
it's funny. So we got four... chapters here, and they were released. Well, shall I just do the little bit?
Please,
I'll do the bit.
Yes,
so Dalek War, chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4 were released between January and April 2003, seeing the return of our favorite Dalek Empire cast. So we've got Gareth Thomas,
oh, yes,
Sarah Moat,
oh, yes,
Mark McDonnell,
oh, bless, yes.
And then we've also got Teresa Gallagher,
who's that,
as Marana.
Oh, and no, she's Marana. You've got to say it with an American accent.
We've got Hannah Smith as the mentor.
Who played Morley?
Danny Carr.
Poor Danny Carr. Stuck saying, you know what I mean, man? You know what I mean, like?
Anyway, we'll get on to that later.
So these were released individually, which back in the day, like nowadays, would be a 4-CD box set.
Yeah,
there is no way. Do not buy one of these individually and think you're going to get a whole story. This is a 4-part story over 4 CDs. You have to buy the whole lot. Even with like the series 1, I mean, start at the very beginning and go through in order. This is a 4-part story. You will get lost if you just pick up a random release.
I don't think until series 3 you get individual titles for the stories.
No, last time we did, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we should. This one is just chapter, isn't it? Chapter 1,
it's
2,
just chapter
3, and
4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and also, I do think there is something, though, in... And I'm pleased to see that Big Finish are about to do this again and start releasing things once a month, even though they're a linked series of stories. Because I remember getting these once a month and the cliffhangers, you wait 4 weeks for the next one. Well, and you're really excited to get the next one.
There's like linked and there's like a 4-part story. Like, I don't think they would do this nowadays. If it was so heavily linked, it would be a box set, whereas other things just have a theme, or you don't have to listen to all of them. You really do have to listen to all of them for Dalek Empire.
My point being, though, is that if I listened to all of this in one day, it wouldn't have had the same impact that it did on me when I was listening to this once a month.
Well,
sometimes waiting is better than having it all in one go, is what I'm saying. Okay, guys? Don't be greedy. You don't need it all at once.
These Big Finish shows, they want it all in one go.
But I remember...
They want all 4 at once.
I think I got Series 1 and 2 in like a Big Finish sale, and I think I binged like 1 and 2... And I remember 1 quite well. I had no memory of coming back to this. I had no idea. Could not tell you much about going into Series 2.
So do you think the fact that your memory loss of Dalek War and clearly your less than impressed attitude and tone about it are linked in some way?
Maybe.
I do remember this the first time round, and I remember loving the first series, and I remember being slightly less impressed with the second series. I went back and I revisited my reviews ahead of this, because I'm not going to do Doctor Who later, but I gave this a 7, a 7, an 8, and a 9. Now, those scores would be a bit different this time, because I actually think this starts stronger than it ends. But, you know, my scores for the first one were all like 9, 9, 9, 10 or something like that. Something absurd like that. And then for the third series, is that Dalek War as well?
I don't know.
Whatever the third series. The David Tennant series, that I really remember enjoying as well. I can remember vivid sort of images and scenes from that one. This one, less so, until we started listening to it. So, okay. But, please can I say, I don't think this is a write-off.
No,
I still think this is. I think this is good. The first series was great.
Well, let's start with chapter one.
Oh, let's go.
So,
do you know, you usually should start with chapter one.
Yes,
you shouldn't
yes,
start with definitely. Chapter four, everybody. No, okay. No.
So, chapter one. Now we last. It picks up a little while after series one.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the parallel universe Daleks that have been around for a while.
Idea. That's a brilliant idea.
Which are called the Alliance Daleks.
Yeah.
And then we've got our Dalek Daleks.
Can you do an impression of the Alliance Daleks? They all sound a bit like Zippy, don't they? They kind of talk like that, don't they?
I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure what that was. Sorry.
So we've got quite a long period of time has passed. Because...
Yes.
Karlendorf is leading the troops with the parallel universe Daleks against the baddie Daleks. Morana and Albie...
Yes.
Are on a bit of a mission. They've gone off somewhere and they are basically trying to track down Suze.
Yeah, we don't realise.
And we don't know what's happened to Suze since.
No, well, she died, didn't she?
Well, she died.
And then we went off to Yaldas, and that's how the seer of Yaldas was telling her story.
So they're trying to find Suze's body or what happened to her or something like that. Yeah. There was just a lot. I think also we did have quite a gap between end of series one and picking this up. So already you're going into something that you feel like halfway through.
Now that's deliberate. Now Nicholas Briggs is quoted as saying in my Bible, you know, the Big Finish, the Inside Story by Benjamin Cook.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never stop plugging it. he deliberately did not want to set this immediately after Dalek Empire 1. Because he said there's nothing interesting to be told there. Let's push the story on a bit and start where the drama is.
I know, but you feel like you're a bit of off the foot. I mean, you know how I like my narrative style a bit more easier.
Yeah.
And it does, you do pick up as you go along, but you're thrown straight into it and you're like, what is going on? But also, these characters. Now, I don't know, I can't remember what I said about the earlier lot, but...
You loved them.
Did I really like them all? Who is the sort of the hero of this? Because they're all... You can never trust any of them. No. You never know what they
say. That's
what
a deliberate say, move, what, though. Yeah, that's deliberate. All of them,
but you don't have a really obvious hero. Even Susan Karlendorf, who you're obviously supposed to be like, come on, you need to defeat the Dalek. You don't know. Do they actually like each other? Are they just saying this? Are they actually plotting to kill each other? Who is on whose side the whole time? And you kept guessing the whole time. You're like, well, I don't know if I should be happy for these people or not, because who is being controlled by who and who wants to kill who?
Well, the thing is, this series is leaning into that sort of Blake 7 paranoia.
Very Blake 7.
Anyone could sell you out at any minute. And actually, the cliffhanger to part 3 of this relies on that, because it's Albie and Carl and Suze all back together again, all pointing guns at each other, and like, who is going to kill who? That's I think that's a really great moment. It leads up to that, but I think the hero of this is Albie. I think Albie's the everyman, really, and the guy that's in love, and he's the guy that we sort of go to for big, you know, for sort of getting reactions to the horrors that are going on. Suze at this point is... Well, we don't know whether we can trust Suze or not, because potentially, you know, she was with the Daleks and the Daleks may have taken her over.
Well, they find her at the end of this story. So this chapter one is basically catching up with everyone, and then by the end of it, we have found Suze. She is not dead.
No.
Well, her body is found and she's starting to wake up. So that is the point of this chapter one, to get everybody back together and get you up to speed with what's going on. And the biggest addition in this is the mentor, the creator of the Alliance Daleks, who's a great character.
Can I say, that is a brilliant idea. The idea of having this sort of ball queen of the the good Daleks, and the idea of the good Daleks. So essentially, the idea is it is like left-wing politician, but to an absolute extreme. So they always say with right-wing politicians, they will enslave you and be nasty and torture you. And they always say about left-wings politicians is that they'll enslave you and be nasty and torture you, but it's for your own good, because we're good. Mm. And this is basically the idea with the good Daleks and the Mentor. And they're fighting their war against the bad Daleks. But the best idea is that if you don't get involved, if there are worlds that don't get involved with this good fight that we're doing to try and bring peace to the galaxy, they'll destroy those worlds.
And this is what Cullendorf finds out. So you're already thinking, hang on, are they double plotting? Is he actually on their side or not? And this is where you get...
You start to get rumours in this first part about the destroyed worlds, don't you? You don't initially know why. There's a good bit of structuring in this. I think the idea of throwing you in the action and then, but like not catching you up with anything that happened between the end of the last series and this, it's confusing. And they wait until Suze is woken up and then they explain everything that happened to Suze. I would like to see that sort of interesting structuring from Nicholas Briggs in the stuff he's bringing out today. He doesn't do this sort of thing anymore.
No.
And it's I think it's dramatically and structurally more interesting than just telling a linear story. I know you like a linear story, but I thought this was an interesting way to start things.
I liked the sort of revelation in a way of like, actually, is Susan Mendes still part of the Dalek Emperor? Is there's a connection there, and they're not sure, and are they the same mind? Is she contacting them? I liked all of that in this first episode.
What you've what you get is that brilliant cliffhanger at the end of part two where the Dalek Emperor wakes up. I know I've skipped ahead a bit, but it's a great moment, isn't it? Because you're like, is she good, is she bad, what's going on? And then all of a sudden he's in her head going, Susan Mendes, I have awakened, or something like that, some ridiculously melodramatic moment. But you're going, oh god, I really want to listen to the next one now. He does get the cliffhangers right, I think, in this.
Yes, it is very well structured. So that's part one.
Can I give you a small piece of trivia?
Please,
from Nicholas Briggs himself.
Oh, here we go.
As to why this second series came to be, because it wasn't supposed to be two series. It was supposed to be only one series. Okay. His original idea for the second series was to be four one-off stories, but the actors and the audience reacted so well to the ending of the first series, and he's quoted as saying, like, it was such an obvious cliffhanger, just begging for another series. Do you notice how my voice goes a bit smug when I do it in his quotes? Just begging for another series, even though I thought that would be the end. That he decided to continue the story set up in the first. Everybody wanted to find out what happened next. I found out that I did as well. I had to do what I felt was right, mind you. I had an email from somebody saying, I am not going to buy the second series of Dalek Empire if you can't tell me now that Susan Mendes is going to be in it. Because I think it's wrong that she's dead and you should bring her back. Oh, did that sound like, that sounds like Ian Levine, doesn't it?
I bet that was him writing that.
You guess that much about Susan Mendes?
Of course, said Nicholas Briggs. I had every intention of bringing her back, but I replied to this guy and said, I can't tell you. That's not what entertainment is about. Oh, that's very smug, isn't it? You'll have to wait. I said, I'll just have to risk you not buying it. The conceit of the man.
Yeah, I can't believe he replied even. I love it.
So, yeah, so originally it was going to be four one-offs, maybe sort of spin-offs of the first series. But then he decided, no, I want to continue. Anyway, sorry, on to part two.
Let's go on to chapter two. So this is the chapter where we get a new running character, don't
yes,
we?
Indeed. Are you talking about Morley?
In the form of Morley. It is chapter two, isn't it?
Yeah. She's fucking annoying, isn't she? You know what I mean, man? You know what I mean? Look, not every fucking northerner says the word like and man at the end of every sentence. I know this because I podcast with a northerner quite a lot.
I felt like Morley comes out of nowhere.
Well, Albie meets her on a planet, doesn't he?
Then we get that in flashback later on, don't we?
Yes.
And again, it's dropping characters in. Because I remember you and me were looking at each other going, who's that?
I have no memory of Morley. And you think you would with that accent that we're going around the whole thing.
She was so annoying, that's why. You blotted her out of your mind.
I was like, we were both waiting for her to be like an agent or to be something or something going on. And it didn't really pay off. It was just this extra character thrown in for... Not even light relief, because she wasn't really that, was she? She was just this extra loudmouth character.
Yeah.
And, I think I was it's just somebody for... Some, I don't know why. Well, it's someone for Albie to
exactly.
hang out with,
otherwise,
it?
He's just there doing monologues, so he needs someone to talk to.
But, that northern dialogue, it was too much.
It was a bit over the top.
Go and watch Coronation Street, all right? They don't all say like and Matt... You know what I mean? Like, you what know what I mean,
that's
man?
Like Newcastle, that's like Biker Grove.
Yeah, that's Fraser. She? Fraser's She's from Newcastle.
Don't pet with me, pet.
Oh, yeah. I think she said that at one point, didn't she? Oh, it was the worst. Absolutely the worst.
That's my biggest takeaway from part two. It's just her just turning up.
My biggest takeaway from part two was there were far too many sequences of Daleks talking to Daleks in this episode.
Which we didn't have so much of them in part one.
No. It's really bad.
Series one.
And they're really shouty and screechy. You can tell Briggs is really glad to be back with his modulator. You know, playing about that. But I just don't think Dalek versus Daleks talking is interesting.
No, that is the big no-no for me. And
when they're all shouting, I think I had a bit of a headache that day or something.
It's a bit too much.
And I was sort of wincing a lot whilst listening to this episode.
As the story was going on, there was more stuff with the Emperor here. And is it they're trying to find him? There was a bit where they're trying to find the Emperor, and it was actually a hologram. And they thought they found it, but they hadn't. Mm. So trying to track it down, the link with Suze. That... I was following that, but then, just all the other sort of Dalek-y stuff.
You got Albie tortured by the Daleks in this part, and so they're screaming in that one as well. There was a brilliant image, though, of the Dalek Emperor on a huge operating table having his cerebral cortex, because they're trying to get his memory. Mm. The Daleks are looking for the Emperor.
When
because
they say the Emperor...
Well, they think the Emperor's going to win the war for them, don't they?
I see the big one from Evil of the Daleks whenever they say Emperor.
Well, it is that one, isn't it?
But what about the sort of round one that's in the comics, you see?
With all the little lights on his
dome.
That's
a massive thing. I've seen him lying down on a table. Oh, I'm like, he's a bit big for that.
Imagine the poor props guy is trying to get turn him over. Oh, no, wait, it's an audio, isn't it?
It's an audio.
Oh, dear God. But that was good.
I do think all the scenes on the planet where he's trying to find Suze and then we do flashbacks to the Dalek Empire, but all that stuff's good. Mm. But again, what's annoying is all the interesting stuff isn't happening now. Oh, it's all stuff all that's flashback. Happened in the past.
Yeah.
Just like part one. And, spoiler alert, just like in part four as well, the only installment of Dalek War that primarily is set in now is part three.
Okay.
There's a few more things in part two I do want to talk about. Because there's an increased use of the punished planets idea. Where she's literally saying we're doing this for their own good, that it's better than being conquered and enslaved, creating peace and order on these worlds, but violently. I just really like the idea of these, in inverted commas, benevolent Daleks. Mm. Because it's very different from what we normally get. And what you get with the mentor is that brilliant voice. That's a great vocal performance. Who's that?
The mentor?
Yeah.
Hannah Smith.
Hannah Smith, I salute you. You've got a silky smooth voice. I realise you're being modulated.
And this is one that there's like a nerve gas thing in this one as well. And they're trying to get off the ship. And this is all about like Jupiter being transformed into like a Dalek planet and stuff.
Well, that's more important in the next in the next instalment. But I will say this does lead to a superb cliffhanger. Where the Dalek Emperor wakes up in Suze's head, don't you think?
Yeah, that was a really good moment, yeah. So then part three...
Part three is where you get all the sequences on Jupiter with people being turned into Varga plants.
That's the Varga one, yes.
And that was
love
good.
An appearance for Varga.
Yeah. Yeah, but you just like that because it reminds you of the Dalek master plan.
Yeah, but it's all in the Dalek world. You cannot have a Dalek series without Varga.
There's actually a sequence in this episode which is primarily told through sound effects. I can absolutely hear what was going on that planet. So bravo to Nicholas Briggs' direction and sound design there.
I've got to say,
I did think the sound design was remarkably robust throughout this, like really vivid.
Well, it's just, I mean, it was the same as series one, just as good. There wasn't any difference for me.
No, but I think he's a really good oral storyteller.
You know what? Aura with an A, you kick it.
Aura with an A?
A-U-R-A-L, oral, not O-R-A-L, oral.
But I don't think that's, hang on, let me just, A, what is it?
U-R-A-L, you can keep all this in.
Oral, okay.
What does it mean?
Relating to the ear or sense of hearing.
There you go.
Okay.
He's a good oral storyteller.
You give good oral, Nick Briggs.
I was really impressed in this instalment particularly. Did you hear Jeremy James in this episode?
He pops up throughout all of these characters.
I mean, I feel like he's done too many parts by this point.
He does a lot
here. Think about how far we've come into it. Sarah Jane, you know, Marion Conspiracy. Mm. Judge Dredd, he had 101 voices
he's
in that.
He's the number one person to go to. Yeah, he plays three parts in episode three alone.
I think, does he? I mean, he's great.
But Jesus Christ, will you just hire somebody else, please?
Well, you've got Nicholas Briggs is the Daleks, the Alliance Daleks, and the Dalek Supreme in this as well.
Can we have a quick conversation about Nicholas Briggs' very literal dialogue?
You don't like his dialogue,
no,
do you?
No, I don't like it. It's functional. It's so functional. There's no poetry in his writing at all. There's not really any emotion in his dialogue. It's more...
He writes like a Dalek.
I think he's turning into a Dalek.
He's a Dalek. Oh, my God. He's connected to the Emperor all this time.
But you know what? Like, I don't know, think back to like Stones of Venice, where we had those very evocative descriptions of
Venice.
Well,
that's
Venice,
the complete opposite,
like that.
Isn't it? That's the
what Briggs would say is, you know, he's on a Dalek-occupied world. We arrived at the Dalek-occupied world. We went through the mist and there were people dying on the planet. And it's all just it's described very functionally.
Oh, you've reminded me, actually, this is what I miss, I think, in this series. Because series one, throughout, had that narration from the old lady looking back, going,
I remember when the Daleks...
I remember when the Daleks...
came to Vega 6.
Vega 6.
Oh, and Joyce Gibbs, come back, Joyce Gibbs.
Sus Mendes. She was so innocent. Yeah, you had
Why
that
are
framing.
You putting on that accent?
That was her.
Oh, no, Joyce Gibbs. But that does sound like Joyce Gibbs.
You had all of that, and that really helped you follow the story. And it added a bit of more of an emotional impact as well.
Well, can I
looking back? And I think that is the biggest thing that I miss in this. I would have loved to have that, but you can't have that the whole time. But something
they
like
do
that.
Do that here.
No, wait.
They do it in part four. Part four starts in the far future.
Oh yeah, that's a bit different.
So why didn't part one start in the far future and they could have narrated the whole thing?
Yeah. Could have been that.
He wanted to have his cake and eat. He's like, no, we're not going to do the same thing. Oh, actually, I quite like doing that. I'm going to do it just in part four. I was so confused at the part.
I was really confused,
like,
yeah.
Where the fuck are we now? Who are these people? Why are they talking about this great catastrophe that happened? It should have started there. That's how this series should have started. And then they could have it could have been the dialogue between two people, which would have made it different from the first one, talking about all the events. And then you can do that wonderful thing that we said in the first series of skipping the narrative on.
Maybe we could do that. There's been a great catastrophe I need to tell you about.
Okay, but first I'm not going to give you all the answers straight away. I'm going to jump into the middle of the story, and then somewhere in the middle of the first part I'll explain the backstory.
Sit down, have a pickled onion. Sue's love pickled onions. Let me tell you about Sue's.
Yeah, no, maybe we shouldn't do it.
She woke up one day. And then the catastrophe was about to happen. But did we know if Kahlendorf knew what he knew? Or did he not know and was planning something else against the Daleks?
For once, I'm pleased Nicholas Briggs is writing this and not you. Jesus Christ, if that's what we would have got if you would have written this.
No, it should be more like this, like... Kahlendorf was plotting and planning against the Mentor and the good Daleks, but little did they know that the Dalek Emperor was alive in Susan Mendez's mind. There you go. I could have done it. Anyway, back to part three.
oh my God. finally we get,
I mean, I was asking for this in the first series, so I'm glad we finally got some passion between Albie Brooke and Susan Mendes as they have it off in their cell. Do you remember?
I don't, to be honest.
She's all like, oh, come here. Come here, Susie. Like, Doesn't sex always sound weird on audio? Always painful.
Should never happen in the Dalek story.
No, but I was pleased to see some passion.
Well, they still don't share. Like, they didn't share much screen time in series one, and they don't share that much screen time in series two. They never are. For this big heroic couple of the Dalek Empire, they're not together very much at all. No. They just talk about each other all the time.
No, but the fact that we do see an intimate moment.
But at least
moment
we have something. Yeah,
them.
I wonder if that was after. Well,
I think you need it. Otherwise, the ending where they're all pointing guns, there's
now,
no
that's
drama.
That's where it builds up. Yeah, now that was where, okay, we've got them all back together, and now who is actually on whose side?
Well, you've also got a brilliant moral dilemma. I think that, and this, much more could have been made of this. It skipped over so quickly. So it's Morley saying, I want to kill Susan Mendes, because she could be the Emperor Dalek, and she could help the Daleks to destroy the entire universe. I'm going to kill her. That's a really interesting moral dilemma. And they skip over it where Morley gets killed very, very quickly.
And then, yeah, she's sort of just out the way, and it's like, well, okay, you've... It's like she's had her purpose of being that person for Albie to speak to, and now Albie's, like, back. Now everyone's together. Oh, we don't need her anymore. Let's just get rid of her. Yeah, it's a little bit clumsy in that way.
But... Now, I want to say some positives, because we're being quite hard on this. And I did enjoy this. I didn't not enjoy it. I just don't think it's as strong as the first.
No, I think the first one had so much to live up to.
It's the difficult second album. Well, the first one had the element of surprise. We never knew anything like this could exist or be as good as it
is.
We didn't think Nicholas Briggs could be as good as this either, let's be honest. But... You've got the creepy opening with the mentor, and it sounds like she's talking straight to you, but she's talking to the people from one of these worlds, saying, you know, come and join our cause or face the consequences. It's basically like that. But she never, ever loses her rag, does she? She is always calm, even when she's issuing threats. That's really good. We said the set pieces with the Varga plants on Jupiter are really good. The moral dilemma around Suze is really good. The character interaction between Suze, Carl and Albie is really good. And then the cliffhanger where who's going to kill who is really good. So I think this is the strongest part of the four. And it is the one part that is set in this timeline. I think maybe more of this should have been done and less of this sort of hopping back and forth. And
yeah, it just adds a little, for me, it just added to more confusion along the way of, like, actually, where are they now? How long has it been? Has it been a long time? Are they just... it really... You do need to concentrate on these ones.
You do. But also as well, I've complimented the sound design. I do think the music is great in this as well. Briggs is quoted as saying in the book that he was doing the music for this and Jubilee at the same time, and that you can hear an overlap. I really could. There's some musical cues in this, but... Hurrah, the music in Jubilee is phenomenally good, so the music here is good as well. I think, like, as a whole, I haven't done four yet, but scene for scene, this is good.
Yes.
It's when you look at it as a whole, and it's like, where is this going? How is this structured? Do we care about the characters? Is this resolved well? I think it's when you look at it as a series, you're like, it's all right. But when you are listening to it scene for scene, it's pretty good.
I've got a quote here in the CD on chapter four.
Go on.
Listen to what Nick Briggs says.
Oh, God, great. I love it. Don't do it in a smug voice, though. I don't want to be accused for this.
Oh, my God. Wait till you get a load of this. Okay, so this is what he says. Don't you just hate things that go on and on forever, lose their momentum, and then just become a mediocre shadow of what they were? This is before he became creative director.
Oh my God. That is the funniest thing we've ever said on Finish Big.
He says, I do, which is why this chapter is definitely the end of Dalek War and the end of the story that began with Dalek Empire. That's not to say that I've wanted to tie up all those loose ends. Really isn't like that. And although Dalek Empire is in many ways the most outrageous boy's own space fantasy, I've always wanted to balance that by asking the question, what if this was real? So as Dalek Empire has progressed over 8 CDs, I've moved more and more towards treating the story as if it were a series of fragmented historical documents.
Ah.
Bit by bit, I pieced together the significant events, but sometimes we can only guess at why and how something happened, which is often what can make history so fascinating. Hopefully it isn't the end of my association with the Daleks, but it is the end of this story. So that's kind of explained, but yeah, I can see how he's done that, but it doesn't help in terms of a action-adventure narrative that you're trying to say. But.
And actually, do you know what, though? If you were going to do it as a series of historical documents, there's probably a way you could do that within the story.
Mm.
He doesn't do it like that, does he?
No.
He just jumps about all over the place, and we're seeing things from lots of people's perspectives. But actually, you could have, I don't know, a Bernice Summerfield or somebody
also,
piecing together the story.
Yeah, but also, Series 1 had a lot of the news guy, had a lot of the news stuff. You could have done it like that with a bit of Sally Calypso or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No. What's the woman's name from Judge Dredd?
Enigma Smith.
Oh, yes.
She'd be like, hello, my name is Enigma Smith, and here I am, piecing together the Dalek Chronicles.
Famous crime fighter, Albie Brook, has been seen out rescuing his missus. Through the Mendez.
And so you could do it as like a Netflix-style documentary.
We've seen reports that the deadly Daleks are on their way. Stay safe, everyone. Have your eggs sunny side up.
I can't believe that he had the nerve in that to say that people... Now I'm revealing my cards. That some things go on and on until they're a mediocre shadow of their past selves.
Oh, that's so funny. I agree with that point, though, Nick. I do. Okay, well, so, on to part four.
Well, like we said, so chapter four starts off with these two new characters in the future.
Yeah, very strange.
Who are they called? Cy Tarkov. Isn't Cy Tarkov the most Blake Seven Terry Nation name?
Yeah.
I swear there's a Cy Tarkov in Blake Seven.
It's like you put all the letters into a Blake Seven name generator.
Yes.
And there he is.
And is it... Salarin Hardu. I swear there's a Salarin Hardu in a Blake Seven as well.
Hardu, is that her surname?
Hardu.
Oh, how exciting.
Salarin. I can imagine, that's exactly what Avon would be like. We're going to this planet, Jenna, to find a Salarin Hardu. Come with me. Jenna, get the teleport.
Wait, I've got my contact on the planet, Cy Tarkov.
Callie, make contact.
Wait, they betrayed us to the Federation.
Blue Clorogon's coming.
Done. The end. That's basically a Blake 7 episode, isn't it? And actually, I do think there are a lot of parallels between Blake 7 and Dalek Empire, which I'll go into towards the end of this episode. The idea is, one is to mythologize what's been happening so far. So they're going, oh, you know, there are documents in the past of this great catastrophe that happened. Who was it that pressed the button in the end? Karl Landorf or Susan Mendez? He's trying to generate suspense for the ending and to say that at the end of this story, Dalek War 2, there's a huge event. So it's building up suspense. It's like, something big is going to happen at the end of this part, all right? So big, it's, you know, talked about in thousands of years to come in historical documents.
Why are you laughing?
Sorry.
Is it because I said so big? I hear you like a big historical document.
You know how Nick Briggs likes to deliver a big climax, don't you?
Yes.
You know? Well, he did at the end of the first series.
Mm.
Anyway. But it was very jarring.
Yeah, I was a bit confused straight away. I was like, where are we now?
Didn't I turn to you at one point and go, who are these people?
Salarin Hardu and Cy Tarkov, of course.
Oh, no, there is.
But actually, Cy Tarkov is played by the same actor, Stephen Elder, who played Pharaoh in Jubilee.
Oh, yes.
We're good friends, you and I. Yeah, so he's a really good actor. So I think they're well acted, those scenes. It's just, we left at the end of part three at a very dramatic point. He's doing a Stephen Moffat. I'm not going to give you the cliffhanger resolution as to whether Albie killed Suze or Suze killed Karl Landorf or Karl Landorf killed Suze or Albie. We're just going to go thousands of years in the future and talk about what's happening there.
Oh, he's in Lost as well.
Are you listening to me?
Yes, I am. I was looking up Stephen Elder.
What's Blake 7 reference number one is Suze kills Albie.
Yeah.
So essentially, the story is this. Are you ready?
It just sort of just happened.
Boy meets girl. Girl becomes Dalek Emperor. Girl kills boy. It's the old romantic story, isn't it? That's where he leaves.
And then it was just, I don't know, it wasn't very dramatic for me.
Well, no, because we don't hear his voice again, do we?
No, that's the thing. It should have been a big...
It's sort of an off-screen
epic moment. Yeah, it should have been something bigger than that.
Yes. Well, we all like something bigger than that, don't we? But actually, what we're heading to is the point where Carl says... What's the quote? Victory or death.
Yes.
And so the idea then is victory or death, and all the Daleks blow up, don't they?
And this is where he tells the story, like a myth from his world, about Sancroft.
Who's Sancroft?
You don't know Sancroft? The guy from Sirens of Time, the Knight of Alicia from Sirens of Time.
Wow,
and Sancroft,
God.
And that's where he gets the victory.
He's tying it all in, isn't he?
Yeah. When that came up and you didn't even look at me or say anything, I was like, oh, you don't know.
No, I didn't realise.
Sancroft, okay. Remember?
I mean, I'd say on the one hand, it's quite nice to tie all this continuity they're doing, but to remind us of the Sirens of Time, Nick Briggs, you've got some nerve, right, to remind us of that piss poor attempt to kick off an entire series of Doctor Who adventures.
Carry you to bathroom.
But I did actually think the bit where he tore the Dalek out of the casing, sort of slapped the mutant on the floor.
Yeah, and had a chat with it.
I thought that was rather good. And
can you speak? Oh, you can't speak.
Galen, okay, please, then, you're not right in this.
Oh, Carlendorf, you're alive. We're having a private conversation.
He's not feeling very chatty right now.
But what was... Unfortunately, I do think Gareth Thomas regaling us with that myth, that was the best part of this episode. Yeah, that was an interesting story,
yeah,
well told.
Yeah.
That was like, okay, well, what does that leave for the rest of the story? Because, you know, you said the death of Albie was... anticlimactic. Mm. The victory or death moment where all the Daleks, we just pull away from the story, and it goes, oh yeah, well, all the Daleks blew up and that was the end of that.
It just stopped really, didn't it?
Do you recall in the first series when Suze went, death to the Daleks?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a really dramatic moment. And then we got all the consequences afterwards. Mm. We got victory or death. That's the new saying in this one. And then that's it. We leave that part of the story. And it's all set in the future from that point on. So there's no consequences at all.
Mm.
We find out...
Well, it's because the destruction was unimaginable.
Yeah, again, very Blake 7. The bad guys effectively win.
Yeah.
Don't they? They say that billions of Daleks died. We've lost Albie Brooke. We've lost Morley. We've lost Marana.
Oh, yeah. And who was 68ed later on? The American, yeah.
Yeah, Marana's dead as well. But... Yeah. So effectively, everybody dies. Nobody gets a happy ending. And Carlendorf is the one person that survives.
He goes home and lives in Felicia.
But miserable. They say he has a miserable life. So I was like, is that where we were heading then? For everyone
it's
to have
a... such a Blake 7 ending, thinking about it, yeah.
It's very cynical, isn't it? Terry Nation could have written this.
Mm. But it's all off screen as well, which is just a shame.
I'm not sure why you would pull away at the point where the story is dramatic.
This is that historical documents thing, I suppose, being like, well, the great battle happened.
Yeah, but do you know what?
This is what
Can I tell you? There's a reason why we watch movies with dramatic incident and don't read historical documents. That's because movies are entertaining and documents are boring.
Will you be pleased to know Nicholas Briggs has said this is the last Dalek Empire series ever. This is the end of the story.
No.
It's over, everyone.
Don't give me that bullshit. At the end of this story, we get a very Mission to the Unknown moment where a Dalek broadcast from the edge of the galaxy comes in going, ah, we are coming, we are coming. I'm like, here we go, there's series three then. So what's he talking about on that sleeve? That's the last of this.
Well, we'll find out when we do the next series, won't
we? I think he means it's the last of these characters, Albie, Suze, Carlendorf,
and
all of
that.
Oh, he
says, I hope I'm still associated with the Daleks after this.
Yeah, but... but...
yeah.
No, the end of the... No, I don't think they plan to do any more.
Yeah, but we do get another series.
Yeah, no, but we don't know that at this point. In 2003, we are.
Well, yeah, but he's lying then, isn't he?
Yes.
He says he ain't going to do any more,
we'll
and he's doing
out.
More. But
maybe it was irresistible.
The next series is all set in this future time, isn't it? Like way after the time of Albie
yes.
Susan.
Yeah, I remember loving that, but I can't remember much about it. But no, this was I'd still prefer series one over this.
Oh, series one is way better than this.
I did like revisiting these characters, though, because I do like Susan, Karlendorf, and Albie and everyone.
I'd say that there's enough incident here for about 2 hours, and it runs to 4 hours. And the way we sort of mark that time is by doing this weird jumping about in the narrative. Mm. So he does lots of tricks like that, bringing in characters like Morley that are forgettable aside from the fact that she's very northern. And then extended sort of emotional scenes between Albie and Suze and things like that. It's an interesting corner of the universe that he's carved out.
Yeah. It's, I mean, No Moyen's terrible. It's just okay.
Is it really mean to say I think the post-production is better than the writing here? Whereas I think the writing and the post-production were absolutely in simpatico in the first series. I think sometimes you can rest on your laurels if you've done a really good thing with this.
Maybe
had a great reaction.
Maybe if it was like well-received, he's like, great, let's, we can just do the same. And
if the first series had been like, okay, everyone's like, oh, that was all right, they'd be like, right, we'll try harder next time. Mm. The first series was so well-received that it's like, well, people just want to hang out with these characters, don't they? Let's do that again.
John Ainsworth involved in this one as well.
He was, yeah. Well, what else can you say about this?
Well, I think we've said it, really, haven't we?
Do you think we're going to upset people that like Dalek Empire?
I'm not sure if everyone loves this. I mean, that person that emailed about Susan Mendes all them years ago might be upset about it. But if they're still emailing, then they've seriously got a problem.
We'll get an email. How dare you insult my beloved Suze?
Just a word for Mark Donaldson. Mark Donaldson? No, Ian
Mark
Brooker.
McDonnell.
God, Mark Donaldson's from On the Time.
You always get mixed up. What's Mark McDonald.
So, just a quick word for...
I'm going to keep that in.
Mark McDonald.
Sarah Moat.
Sarah Moat and Gareth Thomas, who I do think are utterly committed to these roles.
Holy Trinity of Daleks.
And if we are throwing out compliments for Nicholas Briggs for brilliant sound design and music, I just wish the script had been a little bit better overall. I think it just goes to show that you can't try and do the same thing again.
No, that I think that's it. He's just trying to hit all of those things exactly, not exactly the same, but yeah, it needed to go a bit further or be a completely different.
The ideas of the benevolent Daleks, the Mentor and all of that, really, really interesting.
That is very, yeah, and I've
they
not...
barely feature.
No,
to be
have
honest
you ever
with
had
you.
That, anything like that? Since so
there is a sort of element of shying away from the great ideas here in favor for giving us more of what we had in the first series, which is a bit of a shame. And interestingly, for the third series, he completely is a massive departure. All new characters, it's 6 parts rather than 4. It's more like a, it feels less like a cohesive story and more like a series of standalone adventures.
Yeah, I have no memory of
He tries something different and that pays off as well.
Yeah.
And then for series 4, with Maureen O'Brien and Noel Clarke.
More than that with popular
just
combination.
Just the two characters you think you bring together. Mickey Smith and Vicky. it's something really different again. So, and that's sort of leaning into Battlestar Galactica a little bit. And that sort of vibe. And away from Blake Seven.
Well, there we are. Another series done.
Yes.
And shall I tell you where we're going next?
I don't regret listening to it.
No, not at all. No. It's still early. Big Finish is still really, really good.
But I am left wanting more.
Okay.
You know?
Well,
and you should never be left wanting more,
no,
should you?
No. Not
or
not,
dissatisfied.
No, Nick Briggs' oral should always satisfy you.
Yeah. And orally, it usually does, you know. It's sort of when it's the more hard stuff, I get very disappointed by it.
What should I say where we're going next?
Yes, please.
Well, we're back to the main range of Doctor Who, everyone.
Yay! We love going back to
that'll
the main
be,
range.
That'll be an easy one.
And I've got to say, you love it when we go back to the main range too. That's when we get the most listens.
Right. Well, the three releases that we're doing are...
Oh, come on, bring it on.
We've got Necromantia. We have to get to it at some point.
No.
We put it off last time.
Do you know, maybe it will be a lost classic.
Maybe. Yeah. And then The Dark Flame.
Oh, no. So bad, you know, that Lisa Bauman
disassociated herself from it and said that this was awful.
Did she?
Like, in that book, in the untold story. I've got some great quotes about it. Not that
bad. I quite like the Dark Flame. Anyway, we'll see. And, of course, Doctor Who and the Pirates.
Oh, finally. We're going to have something good.
Oh, God. I'm warning you all now that there's probably going to be some singing on that episode. Oh, God. Anyway.
They call him Evil Joe. He is a pirate genuine. To sail the ocean all his days. Please, please, allow me one more chance to give a review on Finish Big before you cut me down like a dog. Oh, it's going to be a great episode, this. Mm. We're going to be savage.
Okay, well, we will see you for then. And don't forget, in the meantime,
to
finish.
Finish.
Big.